Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important, to the fastest growing, and now the largest segment of society. To those who have finally come to realize that they cannot trust any of the world's political, religious, military, economic, or media institutions, that they are all corrupt, and that they have universally become counterproductive. They cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, even if you'd like to take the opposite point of view, you're welcome to do so toll-free at 877-300-7645. It's my pleasure to welcome in IQ Al Rasooli. IQ, how are you this morning? In fact, evening for you.
Fantastic. I'm doing fine. America's not doing well. The world is not doing well, but I'm doing fine.
Okay, well, great. You know, the world is not doing well. The world of Islam has raised its ugly head, and no one seems to know how to deal with it. Yesterday, we spent a lot of time talking about the Islamic State, and we had callers that were suggesting that they had to be stopped. And I know that this is a difficult conversation for you because you're an Iraqi, and so their presence in Iraq has to be chilling and terrible. But I came to the conclusion that other than Jordan, there really is no place else for them to go. What do you think? Do you think there's any chance the Islamic State invades and successfully occupies Iran, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon?
No chance.
I agree.
No chance. No, even the way they are moving, no chance.
No.
But as you say, they might attack and occupy Jordan, yes.
Yeah, I think they may attack and occupy Jordan. I don't think they're going to try to take over Saudi Arabia, because the Saudi Arabian military, at the amount that America has provided weaponry, is way too strong. And Saudi Arabia has been a leading source of weaponry to them when they're in Syria. And I think that even as it relates to the southeastern part of Iraq that is mostly Shia, that other than some symbolic battles here and there, they're better off if they just let Iran control Baghdad and southeastern Iraq. What do you think about that?
I think they are going to let that. I agree. I have to agree with you. There's nothing to disagree. They cannot touch the southern part of Iraq because of Iran. They cannot touch Turkey. Turkey will literally smother them if they want to go.
I agree.
They can destroy them. There's no question about it. The Turkish armed forces are one of the best in the world.
Yes.
Even though they haven't been to war. But they are, as you said before, totally armed by the United States of America.
Right.
Totally.
Right.
And they're part of NATO. The question I would like to ask you, and this is exactly the reason nobody is addressing it.
Okay.
Supposing you are in power in the United States of America.
Yes.
Or anywhere in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And Islam, you know, is the greatest threat to your nation.
Mm-hmm.
And there are Muslims in your country.
Yes.
What will you do? Be honest. It's not easy. I know the answer.
Yeah, there's only one answer, and that answer is something that no Western nation is willing to do, and that is to recognize that Islam is a vastly more lethal disease than is Ebola. And just as the only solution to Ebola is to quarantine those who carry the disease so that they do not infect others, the only answer to Islam is to quarantine the disease.
Okay. You're using general terms. Be specific. Mm-hmm. I mean, I honestly have a very good idea. What you should
I'd make Islam.
Quarantine them. How do you quarantine them?
I'd make Islam illegal. In my country and their countries where they have a majority, I would disassociate entirely. The reason I began this by saying, IQ, that I don't think that the Islamic State is going to go any further than they are, with the possible exception of Jordan, is that if I were in power, I would leave them alone. I don't think there's anything to be gained by bombing them. As a matter of fact, I think that by bombing them, we will make them more effective and larger and more successful than if we just leave them alone. If we just ignore them, they're not going to go anywhere. We can't save the part of the world that they're at. It's already destroyed. We contributed to its destruction, but there's nothing we can do to make it right. So I would just completely leave them alone. But as it relates to, and that's half of the quarantine, just leave Muslims alone. But I would also stop providing Muslims with weapons. In the United States, the challenge is that and in Western Europe, you can speak more adroitly of Western Europe than I can, but my experience in America is that about 80% of Americans are ignorant. They are clueless about the nature of Islam, and therefore they would not understand why it is more deadly than Ebola, and would not understand why it has to be declared illegal. So I would attempt to teach them why Islam is so deadly, why it cannot be resolved, why it has to be pronounced as illegal, and why Islam has to be quarantined.
Correct. So far, so good. But again, you have not answered the question. You are in power.
Mm-hmm.
You have shown the American people that it is more deadly, and Islam is more deadly, maybe 10,000 times more deadly than Ebola.
Yes, it is.
What will you do next?
As I said, I would declare Islam illegal, which means I would shut down every mosque. I would shut down every mosque, and if a person, so every mosque, every Islamic institution in America would be shuttered, and it would be illegal for people to gather or disseminate information on behalf of Islam. And then abroad, I would cease buying OPEC oil. I would cease engaging with them. I would cease supplying them with weapons. I would quarantine them. I would say to the world, we should have nothing to do with them. And if they wish to go back to the Stone Age and kill each other with sticks and stones, let them.
So far, I agree with you. What will you do with 3 to 4 million Americans who are Muslim? That's what I'm guessing.
The only thing you can do with those Americans who are Muslims set of parameters and to say, you know, if you're willing to renounce Islamic terrorism, renounce Muhammad's example, renounce the Quran, you can live here. Which means you're going to have to be a really lousy Muslim if you wish to continue to label yourself a Muslim. You can't go to any mosque. You can't demonstrate your religion in any way. The religion has been declared illegal because it is traitorous. And so, and if you're not willing to abide by that, and most Muslims aren't willing to renounce Islam. If you're not willing to renounce Islam on that basis, then we're going to deport you.
100% agreed. And it is so draconian. Mm-hmm. The rules have to be draconian. Said that years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We need to change the law.
Yes.
We cannot tolerate anymore the intolerance of Islam because it's destroying us from within and it's destroying us from without. And if we don't stop it now, we are dead.
Correct.
80% of humanity who was not Muslim is going to be destroyed.
Yeah. The problem, IQ, though, is that the leaders in the United States and Europe, rather than referring to the Islamic State as a manifestation of Islam, they are referring to them as if their interpretation of Islam is wholly erroneous and unique and out of touch with the majority of the Islamic world. And so the leaders of the West, media leaders, academic leaders, political leaders, all take the approach of that Islam is not the problem, and they are never willing to associate Islam with the terrorism Muslims perpetrate on the world. And until you resolve that problem, until you get people who are willing to speak out honestly about the direct correlation between Islam and 99% of the world's terrorist acts, then the rest of this is impossible.
This is why I've been, when I talk to many radio talk shows, I have been saying that it is up to the American people, the individuals.
It is.
And up to the European people, the individuals, to rise up against their government.
Yes, it
is. I mean, literally, rise up against their government.
Correct. But
because
we're in complete agreement.
Our leaders are the criminals, not,
correct.
Not
right.
The Muslims. Not
well,
Islam.
No. Islam is criminal, and Islam is murderous. But our leaders, Western leaders, are even more culpable as it relates to the onslaught of Islamic terrorism and the destruction of the world than are the Muslims, because they ought to know better, and yet they're arming them. They're aiding and abetting them. I mean, our approach to the Islamic State is to provide more weapons to Shia Muslims, to Kurdish Muslims, and to bomb on behalf of Assad and Iran. I mean, that's counterproductive. It's suicidal.
Okay. It is suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
And they're meeting in Europe, I think it's England or somewhere, Wales. They're having fantastic dinners with excellent wine.
Yes.
And not making a single correct decision, either on ISIS or on the Ukraine. Not a single logical decision.
By the way, I will never use ISIS again. I will never use ISIS. And let me tell you why I will not use ISIS. ISIS is now being used to eliminate having to say Islamic. And so, since they are, by their own definition, the Islamic State, I will only use Islamic State. ISIS is being used as an acronym so that they do not have to say the word Islamic. The problem is Islam. And it's the Islamic State is representing Islam better, more accurately, more completely than any other organized group in the world today. Would you agree?
100% agreed.
Well, when we return to Shattering Miss IQ, we're going to talk about the speech that was given by the Secretary of State, Kerry, about the link between the faiths of Christianity and Muslims, and he spoke of America being a Christian country. Welcome back to Shattering Miss. We're having a conversation with IQ Al-Rasuli, the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. Kerry made a speech yesterday, and he was talking about he said, our faiths. So he's speaking as the Secretary of State of the United States. So our would be that he's identifying Christianity as the American faith, which is really inappropriate, that because today I would suggest that the majority of Americans are actually socialist secular humanists. A minority now of Americans are Christians, and it's never been a Christian country. But it says that so he's combining Christianity in America, which is stupid when you're speaking to Muslims. And he says, our faiths and our faiths are inextricably linked. Now, how is it, IQ, that Christianity and Islam are linked? What is the common ground between Christianity and Islam? I'm unaware of it. I mean, I can only come up with one nuance that would be similar between Christianity and Islam. But I'm going to give you a shot at this. How are they linked?
As far as I know, there's absolutely no linkage whatsoever.
I'm going to give you one. I'll give you one then, since you don't have any. So what your point is would be that when he said that our faiths are linked, first of all, he's not speaking for me because I'm not a Christian. When he said our faiths are linked, I could only come up with one. And that is in the Quran, there is the impression, although the Quran contradicts itself on this issue, saying at one point that Yishak Isaac is the heir of the covenant. But for the most part, it prefers Ishmael to be the heir of the covenant. In Pauline Christianity, in the letter to the Galatians, Paul speaks of the covenant in the Torah being made through Hagar and therefore enslaving. Hagar was the mother of Ishmael. And so the only place that they have commonality is that both have misrepresented the Torah vis-a-vis the covenant. So other than that, and they both misrepresent the life and the covenant as it was created with Abraham in the Torah. So other than the misrepresentation of Abraham and the covenant and who it's with, and where they have commonality, I don't think there's any other place of common ground.
Well, even that is not a common ground. By the way, I want Americans to understand those who are listening. When I agree with Yada, it's not because he is the host. It is not because I agree with him because I'm trying to please him. When we had bones of contention, I did not hesitate to go against him. I agree with him because we have come to exactly the same results, the same conclusions based on the exactly the same set of information. And anybody with two brain cells of logic would have had no choice but to agree and come to the same conclusion. You cannot avoid it. Even if you read the first 9 chapters of the Quran, no more than 9 chapters of the Quran, you have to come to the conclusion that the greatest threat to human civilization is Islam.
Well, you know, I would also encourage our listeners to read the Sirah, the biography of Muhammad. Oxford Press is the publisher of the English translated version of it, and in it, you get to know Muhammad as he actually was. As the Sirah is the oldest, most accurate presentation of Muhammad's words and deeds. And in the Sirah, you learn that Muhammad was a pedophile. He was a rapist. He was incestuous. He was a mass murderer. He was a ruthless terrorist. He was a slave trader. He was a kidnapper for ransom. He engaged in sadistic behavior, and he was an avowed liar. And those are the dominant behaviors of Muhammad throughout the oldest biography compiled, the only biography compiled on Muhammad within 200 years of his death.
You missed one.
Okay.
He was also a coward.
Yeah, I would agree. 100%
certified coward. And again, it's based on the book called The Life of Muhammad by Alfred Guillaume, which is the translation of Ibn Ishaq, Sirat Rasulullah. And as you said, it is the most incredible book you'll ever read if somebody is interested in Islam.
Correct.
It's a must.
It is. I think it is the most telling book in the world. And the reality is this Sirah, this biography of Muhammad as it was compiled by Ibn Ishaq and then edited by Hisham, it is the only collection of oral reports from Muhammad and his companions to be compiled and to be committed into writing within 200 years of Muhammad's death. And it's based on exactly the same oral reports that comprise the Quran. It's as old as the Quran. Mike, you ended the last segment where you were encouraging people just to read the first 9 surahs of the Quran. And before I go back to the Sirah, the biography of Muhammad and its validity, is it true that beyond those first 9 surahs, that the rest of the Quran is essentially meaningless for 2 reasons? One is either, or 3 reasons. It's either plagiarized and twisted from the Babylonian Talmud. It's the never-ending argument where Muhammad is constantly accused of being demon-possessed and being a lying fraud. And then he has his God say, I'm going to torture you for saying that in hell. Or it's been replaced. It's something that was contradicted in the more recently revealed surahs. And since the first 9 are later than those that come after it, the Quran is kind of in reverse chronological order, that the statements in the surahs beyond 9 have all been contradicted, and the most recent surahs are the most valid. So when you say read just the first nine surahs, that's really all the Quran that anybody needs to know, correct?
Absolutely. This is why I keep repeating it. The remainder of the Quran is gibberish. I mean, even the nine surahs, all nine surahs are corrupt and gibberish.
They are.
But the remaining ones are irrelevant to the whole of the Quran. By the way, we were talking about Ishmael and Abraham.
Yes.
Nowhere in the Quran does the Quran give superiority to Ishmael over Isaac. Why? Isaac's name is mentioned 16 times.
Mm-hmm.
Ishmael's name is mentioned 8 times.
But in the Quran, there's a contradiction as to who the sacrificial victim was intended to be. So
the interpretation.
Right.
Honestly, it is the interpretations of the Arabs.
Right.
After they conquered the Holy Land, when they started establishing the empire and the Quran became a more legitimate type of book,
mm-hmm.
they started insinuating, and then it became a dogma,
yes.
that Ishmael was sacrificial. Now,
yeah.
ladies and gentlemen, I want you to
understand. And by reading the Quran, you could pick either one of them, because the Quran presents both of them in that light.
But there is a contradiction which is immense.
Mm-hmm.
The Quran says that Allah revealed the Torah to Moses. No question about it.
Yes, that's what it says. That's what it says.
It says.
Yeah, and you know how many times Yahweh says that, and Moshe says that it was Yahweh who revealed the Torah to him? 7,000 times.
Correct. But let's forget, we'll concentrate on the Quran. The Quran asserts again and again and again that Allah, the God of Muhammad, revealed
mm-hmm.
the Torah, which are the five books of the Bible, the first five books of the Bible,
mm-hmm.
to Moses. Now, since the first five books of Moses are the ones that tell the world that it was Isaac and only Isaac
mm-hmm.
to be the descendant or the inheritor of
the covenant.
Promised land,
of the covenant, in promised land.
Of the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Then they are lying. They are literally contradicting mm-hmm. what the Quran itself says.
That's correct.
But people don't say that. Nobody mentions that. The contradiction is immense. If Allah revealed the Torah to Moses, it is the Torah which says beyond a reasonable or even a shadow of a doubt who the follower or the progenitor of Abraham would be.
Yeah, because Yishak's son, Jacob, became Israel and the 12 tribes, and therefore the promised land is an inheritance from the covenant to the 12 tribes of Israel. It's the moment you say that Allah revealed the Torah, it's over for all of the Islamic claims. In fact, it's over for Islam since...
It is so beautiful. It is
right.
so beautiful.
Yes.
It is so simple.
It is so simple.
22 verse 1 says, and it came to pass after these things, that God, the God of Israel, tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, take your son, your only son, Isaac. So, I mean, the Bible is 100,000, it's not 100,000%, but it's 100%.
Right.
Not only your son, not only your only son, but it identifies him as Isaac.
Yeah.
So all what the Muslims say, all what the Arabs say, is totally and utterly contradicting the very
course.
Quran that tells them Allah revealed the Torah.
Yeah, it is one of the reasons, IQ, that that you can be with a rational and informed person so cut and dry as it relates to Islam. The Islam destroys itself because it claims all of its credibility by claiming to confirm the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, claiming to have its God Allah be the author of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, claiming to confirm the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, when in fact the Quran is the antithesis of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And also, Yahweh, throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, which are 2,000 years older than Islam, universally says, not only did he inspire the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, but that a god by any other name is a false god. Based on that alone, Islam is entirely false, a complete and utter fraud. So then you have to look at it and say, okay, is the religion, which we know for certain is a fraud, it's a fake, it's untrue, it's unworthy, it's inaccurate, is it positive and beneficial to humanity, or is it hostile to humanity? Is it inspiring good deeds or terrorist acts? And because 99% of terrorist acts are inspired by Islam and the religion is false, then it is the most humane thing that we can possibly do to expose and condemn the religion.
The only trouble is, while we are exposing our political leaders, academia, media, mm-hmm. and many of so-called clergy are telling the world, their own people, no, no, no. What Boko Haram is saying is not true. What ISIS, not ISIS, the Islamic State is saying is not true. What the Zawahiri is saying is not true. All of a sudden, our leaders, our politicians, our media know more about the Quran than the Muslims.
Yeah, when the Islamic State beheads people, did Muhammad order people who were opposed to him beheaded?
Of course. He beheaded 600 to 900 of the Quraysh tribe alone. That's nothing to do with anything else besides the other Muslims. When Abu Bakr became Khalifa, for the next 2 years of his life, all he did was to behead those Muslims who apostatized after Muhammad died.
Correct.
2 years.
So beheading is an Islamic religious rite.
But in the Quran, it tells you when you meet the unbelievers, I think chapter 47, verse 7 or something, behead them and say, cut off their neck.
Right. Now,
crucifixion. It's not a hidden agenda.
Yeah, crucifixion also. Is when they crucify, the Islamic State crucified a lot of victims. When they crucify a victim, IQ, doesn't the fifth surah, the 33rd verse, encourage Muslims to crucify victims?
Yes, to cut off the hand, left hand and right foot, or right hand and left foot.
Or crucify them.
Sides.
Yeah, or crucify them.
Yes.
You have a choice. You can choose. You can cut off a hand and a foot on opposite sides, or you can crucify them.
Quick question. What's the...
It's all clear. It's all there.
Right.
And here you have Kerry talking about Christianity or talking about anything. How could he possibly imagine... I mean, he is doing it. Whether he is convinced of it, I don't know. But what is his egregious...
Go ahead. Go ahead and finish your thought, and we have both Glenn and Scott that want to ask you a question. Okay.
All right, go ahead, Scott. What's the significance of cutting off one of the hands and one of the feet? Is it just so that way they're not whole when they get buried or whatever? Or what's the significance to that?
IQ, what, you want to take a shot at Quran 5:33?
It's because you have a warped mind of Muhammad. Muhammad was sadistic.
He was.
Muhammad, never in the history of humanity, and I've studied the history of humanity in general, would you find a more vile, a more obscene, and more disgusting human being than Muhammad? It's impossible. Hitler compared to Muhammad is like a Mother Teresa. Why? Hitler hated a certain group of people, Jews. He hated communists. He wanted them exterminated. Fine. Muhammad is the enemy of 100% of humanity. Why do I say that? First, 80% who are not Muslim, and then you have the two groups of Muslims. Sunnis exterminating the Shia because they call them infidels, and the Shia exterminating the Sunnis because they call them infidels. So who is not an infidel on earth? We are all infidels, according to Islam.
Yeah. By the way, I think the reason, Scott, to answer your question is very similar to what IQ said, and that is that not only was Muhammad sadistic, he had an inferiority complex, and therefore he found great pleasure in causing others to be humiliated. The Quran it tells Muslims that they should fight non-Muslims and humiliate them. And so to have a hand cut off on one side and a foot on the other is to be humiliated as a person. And that's the Islamic mentality, is total and complete abasement and humiliation of enemies. It's the idea that if you yourself have no value, then the only way that you can rise above others is to cut them down. And that's the basis of Islam. That's the mindset of Islam, is to debase others so as to artificially rise above them.
So they're basically little kids pulling the wings off of flies.
They are. In fact, Muhammad actually talks about pulling the wings off of flies. That's why they torture dogs. Glenn, sorry for it having you hold so long, but welcome. Welcome.
Well, yes, it's all right. And just the listeners are going to get polemic fatigue here.
Yes.
20 minutes down the bike, it's a little hard to get the context back in place.
Yes.
I originally called in about the John Kerry's choices. Where it's interesting that he should say fate and faith, because fates are pagan goddesses, servants of destiny.
Right.
The pagan
Correct.
Goddesses.
Correct. They are. The right. Fates are pagan goddesses. And the fates happen to be a big part of Islam, because Islam is based on predestination, which is one of a thousand reasons to reject Islam. But the fates, which is a central part of Islam, is not part of Christianity. We'll return in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. IQ, this being the case, recognizing that Islam is rotten to the core, that it's repulsive, that it is destructive, that it is deadly, that it has absolutely no redeeming value, why not quarantine it? Why not treat Islam as if it were Ebola?
I would do exactly what you said, because there is no other choice, and I have proposed this. I have a chapter called Ummat al-Kuffar, and it states exactly what should be done with all Muslims outside Dar al-Islam. That means Muslims who are in the European and American lands. We cannot tolerate their intolerance. We should not allow them to stay with us. They come to us, they run away from their God-forsaken lands under Sharia. They come to us, we give them shelter, we give them food, we give them education, we give them health, and what
yes.
do they do? They destroy us from within.
Right.
They bring back Sharia, the very Sharia they ran away from.
Correct.
Yeah,
go ahead, Glenn.
One particular problem in this vein with regard to your domestic strategy mm-hmm. is that you can't deport a native-born citizen. If they have immigrated or immigrated into the U.S., that's one thing. But if they're native-born, they remain your problem. You can imprison them. You can put them in a camp, but you can't deport them.
Imprisoning them would be just fine as well. It's coming to the realization that the U.S. Constitution and its Bill of Rights has to be amended for America to survive. And just as we were willing to incarcerate Nazis, and Nazism was a religion, read Mein Kampf, it is a religion, it's the people's religion, the folks' religion. Islam and Nazism are extraordinarily similar. And if we do not recognize Islam as traitorous, as poisonous, as deadly, and isolate Muslims, then we have no hope of survival.
May
so,
I say something?
Please.
I said earlier, we have to produce draconian rules. Why do I mean say draconian? Because if we follow the Constitution of the United States of America alone,
mm-hmm.
forget about not deporting them. No, we can deport them even if they are born in America. Look at the terrorists in America.
Well, you can't deport
them in Europe.
No, he's right. You can't. Yeah, you can't deport a citizen, but you can imprison a citizen. And that's
right.
Isolating them in prison is as effective as deporting them, as far as I'm concerned.
Play to our strengths.
Right. Play to our strengths.
Put them in prison.
Yeah, that's right. America is a prison country.
By the way, that's what America did with the Japanese
right.
during World War II. 120,000 Japanese were incarcerated.
Right. And while in World War II, the incarceration of the Japanese was probably inappropriate, and that the vast preponderance of Japanese were not loyal to the Imperial Empire, and we made a decision based upon race as opposed to ideology. The decision we're making here is based on ideology, not race. And so it is not a racist decision. It is an ideological decision, and it's one that your choice is, you'll either do it, you'll either shed your ignorance of Islam, come to despise the religion, isolate it, make it illegal, and stop doing business with any Islamic country, or Islam will destroy everything that you hold dear. Those are your choices. There is no middle ground here.
No, there is no middle ground.
Could you reiterate the title and author of the book you two were praising earlier in the hour?
Yes, yes. It's called The Life of Muhammad by a man called Alfred, A-L-F-E-R-D, Alfred, F-R-E-D, sorry. Guillaume is a French name. G-U-I-L-L-A-U-M-E.
Yeah. Oh, very good.
It is the most astounding book you will ever read about Islam. Why? It tells you exactly what Muhammad was. The same description that Yada has been using for the last 14, 15 years.
Exactly. I've got a copy of it here on my shelf. It is it was the book that made the biggest difference in writing Prophet of Doom. In fact, I couldn't even buy the book. It was out of print. It's back in print now. But it was out of print when I wrote Prophet of Doom. And I had someone I'd never met, went to a library in Texas, found a copy of it, because they had to go to almost 100 libraries before they found a copy of it, because Muslims check it out and destroy it. But The Life of Muhammad, a translation of Ibn Ishaq's Sharit Rasul Allah, by Alfred Guillaume, Oxford Press, is, I think, the single most important book that anyone in the free world can read. In fact, it's a book that I would encourage every Muslim to read. It tells you more about what's happening in the world today than any other book.